Okay, good morning. Can everyone hear me at the back? Okay. Okay, great. So I'm going to talk to you this morning about some research that I've been doing into compulsive buying. And I will use the term compulsive buying and addictive buying interchangeably, because in the literature it's called addictive buying, but it is actually treated as an addiction. And I've been using mindfulness in order to see if that can be of use to people who have a compulsive buying disorder. So first of all, some of the terms. Okay, retail therapy is a term commonly used, and we often say, okay, we're going to go shopping to make our sales feel better. But I'm actually talking about the very extreme end of shopping behaviour, which is around 10 to 15% of the population, where this is actually a very serious addiction. And when you see films made, you know, and books written, it's treated quite lightly, but this is something that actually destroys people's lives. And it's estimated around 10 to 15% of the population. I put women probably more than men, which is what my research shows and other people's. However, if we call it collecting instead of shopping, then
you call it what, sorry?
If you call it collecting instead of shopping, and if you move away from the stereotypical buying shoes, clothes, makeup, and actually consider sports equipment, gadgets, software, then it's potentially more evenly split between men and women. It's a condition that does occur commonly alongside other mental health factors such as depression and anxiety and low self-esteem, and quite often with other compulsive behaviours as well, quite commonly compulsive eating, for example. So just to look at the other side of my research briefly, mindfulness, and here's a quick definition for you. It's the awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally to the unfolding of experience moment by moment. So that's a bit of a mouthful. The key words here is awareness, increased awareness, because we're non-judgmentally paying attention to the present moment. And I'll come on to that a little bit more later on. So how do these things link together? Well, from what I've just said, compulsive buying, it has aspects, psychological aspects. It occurs with depression, anxiety, so on. It's very behavioural, obviously. It's a habit that's gone mad in a way. So there's very much behavioural aspects to it as well. And mindfulness too. Mindfulness has been shown to reduce recurrent depression. It's actually on the NHS NICE guidelines for treating recurrent depression. And it's been shown to increase well-being. It's, if you bring awareness to your behaviours, then you suddenly have choice over what you do. So you can see already that there's some links between these two areas. So what I've done, basically, is an intervention study where I recruited people who were self-confessed shopping addicts, and they did a standard mindfulness-based course. There's a few different variants that are available. I did the most commonly used mindfulness-based stress reduction course. It occurs over 8 weeks. It's quite intensive. They come for 2 hours a week. They're expected to do the practices every day. And after week six, they do an all-day session of mindfulness practice as well. And again, I'll come on to what that is. I also had two control groups. So I had a group of compulsive shoppers who didn't learn mindfulness, and I had a group of so-called normal shoppers who also did the mindfulness course alongside the compulsive shoppers. And I collected qualitative data from the compulsive shoppers. So I interviewed them before they did the course and afterwards, and then again 2 months later. And I collected a whole raft of quantitative measures from all three groups. So, first of all, I'm going to show you some data from before they did the course. So this gives you an idea of what it's like to be a compulsive shopper. And I'm mostly going to quote just from two of my participants, because then you'll be able to see a bit more clearly the change that occurred over the period of time. So first of all, I've already mentioned the mental health side. So here is June saying, I hate the house because my son's always complaining that the house is dirty and there's always jobs to do here. And I think partly it's escaping from the grind of housework and that sort of responsibility. So she's not able to tolerate the mundane and responsibility. She's got high levels of depression. So shopping is actually something that she does to alleviate that. So here's Fran talking about anxiety. So she says, the minute, like yesterday, whether it's because I was feeling anxious or I found a reason to go into the shops. So again, feeling anxious and then shopping will alleviate that. And we've all experienced that to some degree. It does feel good when you buy something. But this is so conditioned for them that it really is an addiction. And then there's also, like I just said, that positive aspect. So that real drive to want to experience something positive. So Fran's saying about the shops is how I imagine, you know, like a Disney World with sparkles, you know, it's just this colourful, exciting and lovely place to be. So you can begin to see that there's a certain fragility and a certain sort of problems around mental health issues. Identity, which we've heard a lot about already this morning. So here June is saying, as you get older, you get this fear of aging. She was actually approaching 60 herself. And people think I'm looking older, and you worry about aging. And cosmetics is my greatest weakness, the expensive ones. If they force out a new face cream, and it's in my favorite brand, I have to have it. So her identity as being a young, attractive woman who shops and looks good was being very threatened by the fact that she was approaching 60. And she talks about that milestone birthday quite a lot. And so the cosmetics was a way of alleviating that. And here she is again. So she's saying, it's like you're leading a double life. There's this woman who goes shopping all the time, who's buying things for to be a woman, some other woman. And then there's me, you know, that doesn't really know who I am anymore. So there's this sense of a discrepancy between who she wants to be. She wants to be seen as this woman who is able to go shopping, who is important, who has money, who can look good. But yet, on the inside, she's feeling a great sense of being lost. She doesn't know who she is. And then the addictive elements to this. So Fran describes how she's not able to self-regulate herself once she's in the shops. Once I bought one thing, that's it. I can't. It's a license to, well, while I'm here, I better get this, this, this. But by the time I finished, just £100 later. So you can see that it kind of escalates once they're in the shops. And the consequences. So depression and anxiety drive the behaviour, but there are also consequences. So June says, I'm aware of depression being there, and I mean the anxiety. And of course it gets worse, because the last year or two I've realised what an enormous debt I have mounted up, and the anxiety is so great now. So then she's so anxious about the financial situation, it actually triggers her to go shopping, which of course makes the whole situation worse. But when you're in that sort of addictive environment, she doesn't feel she has much of a choice. But I think it's also important to emphasise the social context, and they actually talked about this quite a lot, that you can't separate out where they're at in terms of the social and cultural paradigm. So here June is saying, they give you credit cards. I mean, they should never have given me a credit card of £3,500 because it's like someone had given me the money. It's so irrational. So she does recognise how irrational it is, and yet when she receives that credit card, she immediately will go out and buy, you know, spend on holidays or clothes or makeup. And Fran says about the advertising, you see all these before and after on television and think, gosh, yes, they look 20 times better. That's what I'll look like. So yes, they've got vulnerabilities in terms of the mental health aspects and the identity aspects, but they're also being bombarded by these signals. And they talked about a lack of either cultural role models which emphasise how great shopping is and how it can answer all your problems, but also, for example, June, who was the one who had this fear of ageing, she talked about, well, where are the older female news presenters? Where do you see on television that kind of role model of how to age as a woman? And then, of course, back to this idea of retail therapy as the norm. It's what we do, and we all make jokes about it, but for them, this is very much, they're trapped in the situation. So then they learned mindfulness. So as I said, it's quite an intensive course. It involves various different aspects. So it involves learning mindfulness meditation, which is a way of being in the present moment, just focusing maybe on one thing. So it might be just focusing on different parts of the body. It might be focusing on just looking at one thing at a time out of the window, focusing on one's own breath, for example. And you can imagine that for people who actually don't like themselves very much and have this real strong drive to go shopping, actually just sitting with themselves is very anxiety producing in itself. So they were incredibly brave and very willing actually to go through this, but it took a great deal for them to do it. There was also involved in learning mindfulness is little ways of bringing mindfulness practice into everyday life, because okay, it's all very well to maybe do a meditation practice of 20 minutes a day, but how does that impact on life and how do we use it in life? And there's various different practices for doing that. So now I'll show you what happened. So this is now data from after the course. So June says, I felt much more positive as well, not so down on myself. And there was other examples where we could see a reduction to anxiety and a reduction to depression. And I actually measured depression as one of my variables. So here on this graph, the black line is actually my compulsive shoppers who learned mindfulness. And that is a massive change over just 2 months. The red line is the compulsive shoppers who didn't learn mindfulness. So there was also a change for them, but it wasn't a significant change. And then the blue line at the bottom is my so-called normal shoppers who actually weren't depressed to begin with. And there was also a greater ability to tolerate negative affects. So rather than just immediately, or if you're feeling bad, run off to the shops, there was an ability to sort of sit more with that negativity. So Frank is talking about a situation with her son at school, and she said, I had to sit with that uncomfortable, oh, I need to sort it out for him. I don't want him to be going through this. I sat with that, and it sort of worked itself out. So there wasn't this immediate, okay, I've got to dive in and help him, or I've got to go shopping to avoid thinking about that. There was an ability to just sit and be with it. And in terms of identity changes, there was definitely a sense that they had a clearer sense of who they were. So Fran says, it's harder to resist buying if it's something I do like. But then again, that's the difference, because before I wasn't really sure what I liked, and what I didn't like, I just bought. So she was someone who would buy, for example, she saw, would see a green jumper in the shops, and she would try it on and think, oh yes, that makes me look better. So then she would actually buy it in every single colour that was available. But virtually all of the colours would stay in the bags and would never be unpacked, and the green one would be the only one that she would buy. So for her to actually be able to say, actually, I know what I like, is quite a big step change. And here there's evidence of a reduced gap between who they would like to be and who they perceive themselves to be right now. So here's a different participant, Maggie, and she says, I used to buy a lot of shoes, nice shoes for the evening, but I never go out. What's the point? So previously, she had sort of perceived herself ideally as being the kind of woman who goes out in the evening and has a social life. Therefore, she needed the clothes and shoes to go with that identity. But what she realized is that that's not who she really is. So she doesn't need all the trappings that go with that identity. There was also a sense of perspective, and this came through in different ways. So Fran said of her thought patterns, and she said, if I find myself getting swept along by thoughts, I try to step back and then think, oh, that was a planning. I do an awful lot of planning thoughts. Or that was an anxious thought. I think it makes me stop a bit and see. If you label it, it's sort of almost contained, isn't it? So rather than allowing these, particularly the negative thoughts, to spiral to such a degree that she has to go shopping to alleviate it and escape it, she could sort of contain it and then just get on with her her life and what she's doing. There's a different perspective of the long term. So Fran says, and also I'm trying to think, I suppose, whether I can afford it, which actually, the consequences in terms of debt, they occur in some cases long after, but sometimes just a short time after, the actual purchase. And she had never really thought about the consequences of her buying at the time she bought, until she learned mindfulness, and then that longer term perspective was able to come in. And Fran here is talking about advertising, and she says, it's the same old spiel over and over if you listen to it and become fully aware. So she was also beginning to see, well, advertising isn't really telling me anything different. Why would I listen to it? And finally, in terms of the addictive elements, So Fran here is talking to me after she'd learned mindfulness about a recent trip to the shops, and she says, I bought that, and then I got my old rush of, I bought one thing, I might as well, but I was aware of it, and I did buy a second thing, and then I came away, because I could feel I would have gone on and on and on. So you can see that the increased awareness over what she's doing actually enables her to choose, do I want to buy more, or do I want to not buy more? And one of the things I measured was the tendency to compulsively buy. So again, you can see the black line. There's quite a change over just 8 weeks in terms of their drive to compulsively buy, compared with the red line, which are the people who didn't learn mindfulness, and therefore it just stayed level. And then there was a change in the relationship with how they related to material things. So here June is saying, I've got things in my wardrobe that I can remember I wore that when I was very upset, and it's got emotional attachments. I didn't see that at all before, really, think I'm avoiding wearing that because I had an argument wearing it before. This is why I'm always looking for something new, because it hasn't got the attachment. You know, clothes are just clothes. So therefore, she was actually able to wear the things that she had, which meant that she didn't need that same drive to buy new things. So I went back to see the participants 2 months after they finished the course, because it's all very well to say, yes, the course has changed, but actually what are the longer term consequences of this? And I did expect to see some relapse, and I did get some relapse. So for example, the same two graphs, but I've added on now the black line. This is 2 months later, and you can see with the depression, they haven't got close to returning to where they were before the intervention, but there has been a relapse in terms of their level of depression. And the tendency to compulsively buy has leveled off. It hasn't continued to drop, but it has at least leveled off. And this was kind of common across lots of the variables that I measured. And I would suggest that really, yes, it's great for these individuals that there has been a change, but without the wider social change, it's going to be very difficult for the individuals to actually maintain their individual efforts. So, conclusions. So, I would definitely say that learning mindfulness has helped these compulsive buyers. It's helped to tackle the factors that were driving the compulsive behaviour in the first place, so the anxiety, the depression, the low self-esteem, etc. But it also enabled them to manage that day-to-day urge to go shopping, and when they were actually in the shops, to manage themselves in that situation. And in terms of implications for sustainability, surely if someone used to buy six colours of jumpers and now they only buy the one, there's going to be a reduction to consumption levels. And they also felt that they had a greater awareness of the wider context in which they are buying. So, for example, becoming aware of the advertising messages and those sorts of things. But I would also, again, reiterate the wider social change that really is needed in order to support the individual effort. The individual effort is fantastic and important, but I don't know how sustainable it is when the external cues themselves aren't changing. And that's all. Thank you.